Hi, podcast listeners. This is Brooke. On this episode, I talk art with Alice Stites of 21C Museum Hotel about Al Faro. We got pretty deep into his work very quickly, but I think that after a minute or two, you'll get right into the rhythm of our conversation. Enjoy. Hi, this is Brooke Musterman with Let's Talk Art. Today we're talking art with Alice Stites, who is in Louisville, Kentucky at the 21C Museum and Hotel. Hi, Alice. Welcome to Let's Talk Art.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I wanted to talk mainly about the Wrath and Reverence exhibit you have going on right now by Al Faro. But first, can you tell me about 21C? So it's a museum and a hotel?
Well, actually, it's museum hotel. We don't even include "and" in the title because the components of 21C, which is really a new model for both the hospitality world and the art world, are really to integrate the hotel, the museum coming first, of course, and actually we have a restaurant as well. 21C was founded almost 10 years ago. It will be 10 years old this April by collectors and preservationists Laura Lee Brown and C. Wilson, who have been passionate about sharing contemporary art with the public, and they wanted to find a way to do that without building an institution that would be dependent upon tax dollars or good donations or admissions. So they decided to find a business that would help to revitalize downtown Louisville, Kentucky, and it turned out that a boutique hotel was just the right thing.
Oh, that's very cool.
Well, it has been very exciting. So they have been showing, there's about 9,000 square feet of exhibition space at 21C Louisville. Mm-hmm. And there are some permanent installations, and then there are curated exhibitions that change several times a year throughout the spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the years, more people became very interested and excited about the success of 21C, and in 2012, we opened in Cincinnati, and we're about to open our fifth location in Lexington, Kentucky, this next month.
Cool. So it's sort of like a chain of museums.
Well, I like to think of it, I am the chief curator and museum director, and I would say that we consider it to be the art component to be a multi-venue museum.
Yeah.
So we have a permanent collection, which we also augment with loans, we do commissions, we do performances, we have a whole roster of programming, but the exhibitions travel to different locations,
mm-hmm.
not all exhibitions to all locations. And then we have special events and locally based programming, as well as the main exhibitions, which are curated by me and my team at headquarters in Louisville. So it really functions as like a multi-venue contemporary art museum, because I should have said 21C stands for 21st century.
Uh-huh.
So it's all 21st century art.
Cool. Now, I mainly wanted to talk about the Wrath and Reverence exhibit, Al Faro. I was looking at some of his stuff, and it's pretty cool. Tell me about him.
Excuse me. Al Faro's exhibition is one we're really proud to present. There are two of his works are in the permanent collection.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the exhibition is on loan from other museums and collectors. And the exhibition was organized in conjunction with the Crocker Art Museum and the galleries who work with Al, Catherine Clark Gallery in San Francisco and the Forum Gallery in New York City. I've known Al for a long time and a big fan of his work. As you've seen, he makes architectural models of religious buildings with guns and bullets turning repurposing munitions into beautiful architectural sculptures. And he addresses all religions, Christianity, Buddhism,
Islam, Judaism.
He's an equal opportunity critic of the way in which, religion and violence have been historically and continue to be intertwined.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really, really interesting. And I was going to say it's kind of a strange juxtaposition, because I was thinking that a lot of a lot of religions teach peace, and a lot of people would be opposed to that. But I think that there's a history that that I think that would align with. I think that that's I mean, it's a sad history, but I think that it would definitely it's a good criticism.
Well, sadly, it's a very timely to for his retrospective to be traveling around, of course, because we're living in a time of tremendous violence, and particularly of gun violence. And so this is a, you know, this is a very timely topic.
Right.
On 21C, we feel very strongly that, you know, contemporary art gives us an opportunity to start difficult conversations. The
Absolutely.
Art is a good place to start exchanging those ideas. Yeah, certainly he's addressing the history of this, you know, the religious fervor for perpetuating one's belief by, you know, through destruction.
Right.
But it's also something that's clearly we're very conscious of every day, hearing about this happening all over the world.
Right. 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 So, is he religious?
Oh, that's an interesting question that I may have to ask him. So we're currently actually right now installing the exhibition in our lobby gallery. He arrives this evening, and we will be having a public discussion with him on Friday night, and leaving plenty of time for Q&A, because I think the audience will have a lot of questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would tend to think that he does not clearly doesn't believe in organized religion,
mm-hmm.
Because he's been quite articulate about the connection between belief in organized religion and an obsession with death,
right.
Tracing it back to, you know, an obsession with reliquaries, with
right.
relics, with prizing that which signifies death instead of prizing the life that is around us and within us.
Right. Right. So
I would imagine that, but I think we'll ask him a lot of. I'm sure he'll get a lot of questions like that, and he's a very engaging and dynamic speaker.
Right.
And a very I will say he's a very positive person. He certainly has tremendously good energy and seems to be essentially quite a humanist.
Yeah. Yeah. Which actually, and a lot of people don't know this, is that humanism has its history in Christianity.
Yes, that is one side of Christianity he would probably applaud and admire, and what he, of course, is critiquing is the belief that, you know, non-Christians, non-believers, will not have an afterlife, and maybe shouldn't be
right.
you know, alive in the present either. So he,
right.
But yes, he sort of exudes that sense of really, a joyful humanism.
Right, right. Yeah.
Although some of these sculptures, of course, you may have seen the image of the bombed mosque or the burnt church. Or he's begun making this new series of doors. There are a couple of synagogue doors that have clearly been desecrated. So there's this intertwining of an incredibly beautifully crafted object that has been then purposefully destroyed.
Yeah.
And those twin forces of creation and destruction that are, you know, that are expressed in his work are part of the essential nature of being human.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I think that's great. So yeah, that's the thing. I just love it that there's like such a beauty in these relics and the religious objects, and that there's they're just like dark and somberly.
Yeah, no, it's quite dark, and in some ways some of them, especially the ones that are reliquaries, and then there's one church in which there he shows a reproduction of what he calls the finger of Santo Guerra, which means the saint of war, which was it's a real relic that he saw in a church in Italy, which was what really started him thinking about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the finger of this saint is kind of frozen or forever in the shape of what we would call trigger finger.
Yeah.
And you see this in one of the sculptures, and it's really uncanny. I mean, it's really off-putting, because it also, you know, returns our thoughts to not only the history of, you know, religious worship and that, you know, these parts, the body parts of people who are considered saints were kind of parceled out, you know, to these different churches or parishes who then would charge people money to come and worship them. But it also returns you to the physical body and to death, and especially to the role of guns in widespread death. If there's no coincidence that this kind of paralysis that you would describe this finger as embodying is trigger finger.
Right. Right, yeah.
So it returns us immediately to that. And I think, too, one, which I could show you images, was as we installed, but we decided in the installation that since this was all sculpture, most of these works are on pedestals. On the walls, we are using some wallpaper that shows renderings of the buildings themselves. So blowing up one of the models that he made first, Al actually studied, he's a great draftsman, and he studied medieval architecture. Mm-hmm. So these buildings, many of which are based on, you know, real churches or synagogues or mosques, and then he transformed them. It's going to be interesting to give people that sense of the difference in scale, because in some ways, when you see his sculptures, they're entrancing in the way that, like, a dollhouse is, something
right.
in miniature.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, the monumental tragedy of senseless death being, you know, coming from wars being waged based on beliefs
right.
is so overwhelming. In a way, you know, he draws you in with this kind of miniaturization. So we wanted to also give that sense of scale and maybe, you know, spark that kind of a thought for audiences and thinking about that and make you, somehow when you see a large image and then a smaller object, it makes you look a little bit closer.
Right.
And of course, what Al's art is about, as so many, you know, of the most compelling contemporary artists, it's about helping us to see, making us look.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, and he definitely does, because you just can't look away from it. It's just so, and I don't know if you have this one in your exhibit, but I was looking at some of his stuff online, and the one is, what is it? It's the one with the skull. Well, he's got a lot of skulls, but but there's one, there's like one thing that's got like two poles. I guess they're like bullets of some kind. Yeah, and they're just, there's like a skull in it, and it's just chilling. It's just you just can't look away from it. You just have to.
Yeah, I think absolutely, and it because of the context of putting it into a secular space.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, a very secular space, because, you know, this is our museum space, but there'll also be people who come in and, you know, will walk through the exhibition. Not intending to go to a museum, which is a whole,
right.
other. But so you're putting the thing in a very secular space. It's one thing if you go to, you know, a medieval church in Europe, for example,
mm-hmm.
That still has the houses, these relics, you know, that kind of contextualizes it in being okay because it's of that time, it's not of our time,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing of past and now. But you put it into real time in a contemporary secular space. And I think it does, you know, make that connection of we continue to sacrifice, to worship war, to worship this kind of death because of our, you know, belief in the righteousness of our own mythologies, and yet, you know, it's self-destructive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what gives you that. It does make it even more uncanny. It's another, you know, it's one thing to walk through Notre Dame and say, you know, oh well, you know, the, you know, Saint Lucy's, you know, ankle bone is in the crypt downstairs. It's another thing to be walking through a contemporary art space and see something like that.
Right, right, right.
So I think you will, you know, it's always interesting. It's always exciting to hear people's reactions and responses. Mm-hmm. And the catalog that was published in conjunction with the exhibition has a particularly wonderful essay by Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Chris Hedges, who wrote for the AP for years. He was a war reporter.
Right.
And he won a prize for his book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very powerful to hear that perspective from someone who has literally been on the front lines and understands so well what Al Farrow is expressing in his beautiful artwork.
Right.
That it is human life that is precious.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, this might be a dumb question, but he lives in San Francisco, right?
Yes.
What is your connection to him? What is your museum's connection to him?
Well, the 21C has acquired two of his works over the last 10 years. And so I met him at an event in New York, but been big fans of his work. And when the opportunity arises to, you know, give a larger exhibition to an artist who's been important to the collection, it's something that we try to do. And the opportunity arose because his galleries and the Crocker Museum approached 21C and said, would you be interested in hosting, you know, in helping us organize this exhibition and hosting it as it travels? So it will be in Louisville until July, and then it will travel in the fall to the Bellevue Arts Museum, mm-hmm. in Washington,
uh-huh.
And some other venues as well. So we've done this before with other artists hosted, you know, and also co-curated. That we had an exhibition that just left that I co-curated with the Cincinnati Contemporary Art Center for a Brazilian artist whose work has been in our collection. Has not been shown widely in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Albano Alfonso. And so these are opportunities that we look for, because part of 21C's mission is to support the work of really visionary artists from all over the world.
Right, right.
And to collaborate with others.
Right, right. So, okay, you as a curator, what is your job to, like, you work with him to display his stuff, or, like, what exactly is your process through this?
Right, well, in this case, it's less, sort of, this is done with when we're working with curators from the Crocker, and with some others. It's less involved is when, and some other exhibitions that I'm working on, but in this case, you know, we agreed to lend works from 21C to the traveling show, and then from among all of the works of his that were available to exhibit, I selected the ones that we thought would work best in our space.
Mm-hmm.
Because Al is a living artist and very much we have a preliminary idea of how we want the exhibition to look, but we always, when the artist wants to be involved, we welcome that, and so he'll be working with us on fine-tuning the installation, where things will be placed, mm-hmm. and all of that. And then I've created some writing materials about the work, and we'll be, you know, leading a discussion. We do a lot of, at 21C, we do a lot of staff training about the exhibitions and about his art, so that everyone who works there, from the people at the front desk who might be checking people into the hotel, to the museum staff, to everyone who's serving in the restaurant, will be able to share what they know of his work.
Right.
With our guests.
Right. So they'll all be kind of in the know.
Yes, exactly. Because we are this sort of multi-use, multidisciplinary place, and everybody on the staff, whether they're, you know, a server, a bartender, front desk staff, or, you know, on the museum team, feel that the art is central to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And our exhibitions are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and always free.
Oh, wow.
So it's essential that, you know, the overnight staff. I had a great note the other night about some people wanting to look around and in our exhibition space, and that the overnight staff gave a great tour and what a good experience it was. So
that's awesome.
Really nice to hear.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Well, we welcome, I think it's, as I said, it's a new model for how you can integrate culture and commerce and hopefully broaden the audience for contemporary art and start some discussions about important topics like Alfaro, like those that Alfaro's work is raising.
Right. Now, you said that it's all contemporary. Are all the artists necessarily living?
Oh, well, that's an excellent question. One of our founders, Steve Wilson, used to joke that they, you know, everyone in the collection had to be living. But as we, you know, edge towards, let's keep past the first decade and a half of the 21st century, many are, but of course, in fact, I think of one that I always think of because it reminds me, Alfaro. There's a photographer named Tim Hetherington, who's we've acquired, I think, four of his photographs, who was also a war photographer who was killed in Libya just a few years ago, right after we had shown his photographs, which gave us really special poignancy, heartbreaking, to showing the work. But,
that's,
you know,
really,
yes,
nice.
I mean, people will, most are living, but some are not. But, you know, they range in all ages. We have, and the artwork is in all media, from painting and sculpture, photography, to digital media, film, video, performance, and there are artists who are very well known and some who are just emerging. So it's quite broad in its range and scope.
Yeah, and it's interesting because whenever I think of sculpture, I think of like clay, but I didn't realize like Alfaro, he does it with the ammunition. It's with other things, not clay. And I didn't realize that could be called sculpture.
Yeah, so he's really following in the 20th century tradition of appropriation, of using found objects. You know, which even, like, think about Marcel Duchamp, signing a urinal. That was a found object that through context was turned into fine art. And, so Al is gathering materials in a way, you know, think of the Italian Art Deco Verba, when they were using everyday material, transforming them into something else. His are just, in a way, his practice is so interesting because he's turning them into what looks like something quite beautiful that would have to be kind of handcrafted, like fine ceramics, as you say, but when you get up close, it's that moment of, you do have a moment of shock and awe when you realize what you're seeing.
Right. That's kind of why I like the Dada movement, just because you just get that kind of jolting, just kind of like, oh my gosh.
Right, what am I thinking?
Right, exactly.
And I can't stop looking.
Yeah. cool. So what other kind of exhibits do you have coming up?
Well, in conjunction with Al's exhibit, we are going to be screening a very special film by an Irish artist named Willie Doherty, called Buried, and it takes you on a kind of non-narrative journey through landscape in Northern Ireland, in the area where the so-called Troubles happened, with the sectarian violence between the Protestants and the Catholics in Northern Ireland in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
In each Troyd Lindsay Museum Hotel building, we have a dedicated video lounge, and so if the art, we usually choose a video from that works with the group exhibition, or, if it's a solo exhibition for an artist, usually if they don't work in video, then we would show something else. And so this is actually an artwork that we are borrowing from the Speed Art Museum, which is and I think it's very appropriate and will make an interesting and kind of haunting compliment to Al's sculptures, because they're, of course, both exploring this intersection of religious belief, violence, creation, and destruction. You can see this beautiful landscape, and there are just sort of traces of human presence, and the suggestion that someone has disappeared and left things behind, or that perhaps death could have taken place. But it's all it's very nebulous. It's not there's nothing clearly narrated. It's just the suggestion, and of course, knowing where this is in Northern Ireland, and then with that title, like buried, the way that we bury these things in our collective memory, mm-hmm. and perhaps that's part of the reason that we can't seem to escape repeating these cycles of violence in the name of our belief systems.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think that's great, and that sounds really interesting. I'd like to see that too.
He's a wonderful artist, beautiful, beautiful photography and video. Willie Doherty, our Irishman, really fantastic work. So that's what we have. We also have a group exhibition on view called Hybridity, the New Frontier, that will close soon. Mm-hmm. That has traveled around to a few of our locations. Mm-hmm. It's about the evolution of the construction of landscape, mm-hmm. and hybrid species and spaces in 21st century
cool.
Art. And we have, and then in Cincinnati, we currently are showing at 21C Museum House of Cincinnati, we're showing an exhibition called Pop Stars, Popular Culture and Contemporary Art.
Oh, very cool.
That is about the ubiquity of our obsession with celebrity and consumerism.
Right.
And in Bentonville, Arkansas, we have a solo exhibition of an artist named Gina Phillips, who lives in New Orleans and makes amazing work with thread and applique.
Mm-hmm.
And a group exhibition called Blue, that is an exploration of the site of the color as both a mood and matter.
I like
and
it.
In Durham, North Carolina, Museum Hotels, and last year, we have an exhibition called Seeing Now that is about the impact of contemporary technology on physical and psychological perception.
Well, that sounds interesting. They all sound interesting.
Well, you'll have to come visit us.
Well, you said there's one in Durham?
Yes.
That's not far from me, so I can go to that one.
Please do. We'll be actually opening a new exhibition in Durham in March, on March 23rd, Offspring, New Generations, which is kind of an exploration of the role of domestic and cultural ritual.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be opening on March 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
In Durham, and we're right downtown Durham on North Corcoran Street in the former Hill Building that was designed by the architect who did the Empire State Building.
Cool.
And we reopened last end of March last year at 21C. The restaurant there is called County House, and it's a wonderful building to explore. The lowest level is where the bank vault was, which was preserved. Many parts of these are all historic renovations that we make an effort to preserve. Some of the most special parts of the building, in this case, the vault was preserved with the original doors, but the floor was transformed by some contemporary artists into ceramic tiles with images of $100 bills, which you can now walk on in the old vault.
Oh, wow. That sounds really interesting.
It's kind of an homage to the Roman tradition of having artists create floors that depicted the remains of great feasts that were held.
Yeah.
So this is a bank is maybe the aftermath of the heyday of the great industrial era that allowed these buildings, like the Hill Building, to be built, and then they were eventually occupied by banks, where so much exchange of currency was done in the heyday of late 20th century capitalism, and of course all of that has now that kind of business is now being done nearly virtually.
Mm-hmm.
So these great buildings. Everything that went on there is now being transformed into something else.
Right.
Through 21C, in the case of a kind of multi-sensory, hopefully, experience.
Yeah.
That people can have, whether you are a guest or coming to eat, or whether you are a visitor, because the doors, as I say, are open to the public all the time, and we want to welcome the community in whenever they're interested.
Awesome. Awesome. That sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Alice. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I hope we'll see you at Durham or Louisville, Cincinnati, Bentonville, and pretty soon Lexington.
Awesome. Definitely. Definitely. Cool. Thank you so much for being on Let's Talk Art. If you're hearing this, you just listened to the very first episode of Let's Talk Art with Brooke. Thank you so much to Alice Stites for participating, and thank you to you for listening. Hopefully by the time you're hearing this, I will have my website up and as well as the corresponding blog post. Hopefully I'll be able to make the web address less clunky very soon. For those of you who don't know, I have a book, Reptiles on Caffeine, which has nothing to do with art, but is available on Amazon. If you are interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, if you have ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word and Brooke with an E. In episode 2, I chat with James Mundy of Vassar College. It's exciting for me because I was born in Poughkeepsie, and we talked all about the Hudson River School artists. I hope that you will download that episode and stay tuned for the half dozen interviews I've got lined up before the end of the month. Thank you.